Welcome. My name is Mads Christensen, and today we're going to talk a little bit about optimizing websites. And just to start off, I'm a program manager on the web platforms team. So we're the guys building the ASP.NET runtime, IIS web server, the Visual Studio tooling for anything that has anything to do with web, like the JavaScript editors and CSS and so on. Website performance is a lot of things, and here we're going to just be very pragmatic, see what we can easily do, and hopefully at the end of this session you can go home with some tools and very easily optimize your websites, whether it's your private or private blogs or corporate enterprise websites or whatever. So this is very practical. There's a little bit of slides to begin with, but I promise it's no more than 5 minutes, and then we're going to dig into the code. Feel free to ask me questions as we go along. I will also leave some room at the end for QA. Okay, so why do we want to optimize performance for websites? Well, Google did a test some years back where they slowed down, I don't know how they did it, Thread Sleep 500, something like that. They slowed down their search page by 500 milliseconds, and they saw a 20% decrease in traffic. That's quite substantial. What is half a second? I mean, is it, you barely registered, right? It's, you don't, maybe you don't think about it, but 20%, that kind of speaks for itself. Amazon also did something. They slowed their page down 100 milliseconds, like a tenth of a second. And they lost 1% of their sales. In 2010, Amazon sold or had a revenue of $34 billion. 1% of that, $340 million. Divided by 365 days is almost $1 million per day by slowing their website down by a tenth of a second. This is not even registrable, you would think, by the brain, but apparently it is. So imagine being the Amazon developer figuring this out and optimizing the site for 100 milliseconds. He's going to earn $1 million a day or in sales. This is quite substantial. So there's plenty of reason why we want to optimize our websites. But we could optimize a lot of things, right? So a typical website might look something like this. You have your database. On top of that, you have your layer, your data access layer. Then you have your business logic. And then you have ASP.NET or the presentation layer. And database optimization, that, indexing and these sort of things. A data logic layer, business layer, could be caching going on in there. We could optimize those things. But we could also optimize on the top thing, that the one between ASP.NET and the cloud. We should do all of them. And there are plenty of tutorials on how to optimize database performance, right? And caching techniques and strategies and so on. What you won't find a lot of places is what do you actually do with a presentation layer? And do we really care even? Right? Do we even care? Well, as it turns out, yes, we do care a lot, or we should. Because if we look at a website, this is yahoo.com, if we look at a website, the top bar is the HTML, the page itself. It takes 0.24 seconds to load. That would probably be where we display our data that we got from the database or the caching layer, right, that we have optimized. So we get that pretty quickly, 0.24 seconds. But look at all the other requests coming in. These are all the images, the style sheets, the JavaScript. It takes 2.4 seconds for the page to load because of all these external resources that the browser is going to bring in from the server. So we could optimize a lot on our data access, for instance. But we will only shorten the time on the top bar. Right? We won't help any of the other requests. The page will still load 2.4 seconds, maybe 2.3 if we optimize really well, right? So clearly, there's a lot of optimizations to be done for the layer between the server and the browser. So let's look at that, because luckily for us, it turns out we can actually do a lot very easily. If we look at some of the big sites out there, you can see that as a general trend, most of the time spent by the browser doing requests goes to other resources than the HTML. MSN, 95%, eBay, 95% of the time, load time, the browser spends on retrieving images, JavaScript, and so on. This is kind of interesting. So, let's see what we can do about that. Okay. I have made a website. Let's just see here. Get the IIS up and running. It's a very, very simple website. It's a daily photo. I can click on a daily photo, and that's about it. You would imagine that a site like this, because it's so simple, there's not really much we can optimize, right? I tell you that there is no databases here. There is no data layer. This is as simple as it gets. And it looks like this. All right. So very, very simple. It's built. It has a master page. The master page contains some style sheet, contains some JavaScript. We can get rid of this guy. And very, very simple markup, right? And it has a default page that simply just contains the top image and the five thumbnails of the daily photos. And that's it. End of story. So it appears that we have the most optimal website that we have. I haven't done anything to it. I just built it. But as it turns out, both Google and Yahoo has been so kind to help us with some tools for diagnosing and analyzing our site, finding out are we actually as performant as we can be. Well, according to Google, they say no, we get a red dot, a score of 71, the red dot here. We'll get back to that. So Yahoo, with YSlow here, it's called YSlow. By the way, does anyone here know Google PageSpeed or YSlow? A lot of you. Okay, great, great. Just for the fun of it, those of you who have tried it, have any one of you ever got 100 in score on either one of them? We have one guy. Excellent. Okay. And amazingly enough, they agree. Both Google and Yahoo says we get a score of 71. This is actually rare that they agree, like, exactly. Let's take a look at the statistics. This is how our website looks. If the first time the user visits our site, this is what we have over here. The cache is empty in the browser. This means that everything has to be downloaded, all the images, all the style sheets. And that totals to 24 requests and 330 kilobytes. Right? This is not a big deal. This is just standard thing. At a prime cache, that means the second time that the user enters our website without having cleared his or her cache, it looks much better. The IIS web server makes sure to handle some of this thing, and the browsers are clever enough to actually cache images and style sheets and so on. But they do it on their own demise. We don't tell them as developers what to do. Well, not yet anyway. In this case, I have not done that yet. So they guess, okay, this image, I've seen that before. I'll just I'll just use the one I have in my cache and hope that it hasn't changed, you know? It just guesses. So, but you see the same thing here. It's 24 requests, even the second time that we enter the site. Over here. So, let's do something about that. Now, one of the things that Wiselow complains about, it has all these rules. So let me just give you a brief overview of these tools here. It has some rules that it looks on your page, checks a lot of things, and tells you if you could optimize some of this stuff. And you see here, there's a lot of individual grades here, D for, I have too many HTTP requests, it says. We're going to fix that as well. But one of them is put JavaScript at bottom, right here. And if we take a look, indeed, we have our JavaScript in our head. And there's a, this is very, very common, you see this, that you stick your JavaScript in your head, the head element of your website. The problem with this is that JavaScript stops rendering. So when the browser reads your page and it hits a JavaScript tag or script tag, it actually stops rendering the rest of the page until it has downloaded and read the JavaScript and parsed it and executed it. So that's, in many cases, a bad idea. We want to have the page loaded as fast as possible, right? So always, 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 if possible, sometimes it's not, but there are workarounds, put it down here at the bottom, right? So then the entire page is loaded. And then we execute the JavaScript. Sometimes when you do web forms, for instance, you have controls. User controls or server controls is going to spit out a script tag, right? Or partial and MVC and whatnot. So that means that then we can't put it at the bottom. It's going to live somewhere in the middle of the body. And that's okay because we can do this. We can say defer equals defer. So this is supported in all browsers from the only, anything older than Firefox 3 or below does not support it, but every browser besides that does. So what it means actually is, if I take this script reference and add it to the head, for instance, with the defer equals defer, what happens is that it actually pretends that it lives on the bottom of the page. So it will not stop rendering the page. If it has a defer attribute, it will just continue. So that's a nice little trick. Okay. Gonna save this. Gonna go back here, do an F5. We have a score of 71. So let's see if this here helps us. Okay, we got a score of 72. So we're getting closer. We need to hit the 100, right? Well, we don't need to hit the 100. It's almost impossible to hit the 100. So never be sad if you never hit the 100, but at least get to the 90s, at least. Okay. Then we have this expiration. That was what I talked about before. You know, expiration on our static elements, like style sheets and images, is very, very important because we can tell the browser to cache our images, for instance, for a year. That means that the browser will never ask for those images again within that year. That's pretty interesting, right? We can offload all that bandwidth to the browser and say, hey, just use your cache. So we want to do that as much as we can. And IIS 7 or 7.5, both of them, makes it very easy for us. So if you go to the web config, and static content. I think I have a snippet for this. Here we go. I can add the client cache element here to my web config. Now let's take a look. It gives me some options. I can use expire header. An expire header is a date time, a fixed date time. I can say it expires January 3rd, 2012. I can also use the max age, which I do in this case, Actually, it says, cash this a year from now, no matter when now is. Just cash it for 365 days. And that's exactly what I do here. So it's a sliding expiration, if you want. So let's just do that and go back. Okay, we now got a score of 81. And if we look at the statistics, this is quite interesting, right? Come on, Weislow. This is very interesting. We now go from 24 requests to one. We now have one request. The second time the user enters the page, he only makes one request, and that's for the page itself. So that's quite substantial. But we still have this original thing where when you enter the first time, which if you look in your stats, it will be around 50%. Yahoo did a test how many people actually have a Prime cache when they enter yahoo.com, and they found it was about 50%. So 50% of your users are probably have not been there before or have a cleared cache, so they have to download everything. And that hasn't changed. It's still 24 requests, and it's still 330 kilobytes. So, one of the big things that we're told is that we should make fewer HTTP requests. We do have a lot of styling sheets. We do have a lot of JavaScript. And in this case, I have one single page. I'm not going to reuse anything on different pages. So it's very simple for me to say, okay, I want to bundle all my CSS into one file, and I want to bundle all my JavaScript into another file. This is this requires that you do a little bit of custom stuff, but that's okay. We can do that. First of all, I'm going to register two handlers. And so in the system.webserver section of the web config is where we actually talk directly to the IIS web server. And by adding some handlers, I'm telling the IIS web server that everything with the extension of .js and .css should be routed to this application, to this website. And it should be routed to the HTTP handler called file bundle handler. So in this case, I actually use the same bundle handler for both CSS and JavaScript. And I've got it right here. So basically what it is, it's a simple IHTTP handler interface, an implementation of that. And what it does is that it lets me reference a folder instead of a single file. So I can see here, I have a folder called styles. This guy here lets me reference styles.js, or sorry, .css in this case. Even though styles.css as a file does not exist, this handler recognizes, hey, styles is a folder. I'm going to take every CSS file in that folder, read the contents, and response write it out as one chunk. Right? So we get bundles of all our files into one response. Make sense? So let's do that. We then have to change our references, because now we have to reference those styles.css and script.js instead of the individual files, right? So we can do this guy. Okay, so bundle helper, again, it's in here. Insert file. Basically what it does is that it just reads the it reads the files and it spits out a version number. I'm going to show you why that's important in a second. But let's do the same up here. Remove all of these and do this. Okay. See if it works. It appears that it works. Let's have a look. All right. Here we go. Can you all see? So here's our new link tag. This is where we reference our style sheet. Notice that we have this weird-looking V underscore integer thing going on. So that's actually a hash of the files. So this guy right here, bundle helper insert file method, actually reads the files in the folder and figures out what version number they have based on a MD5 hash. And why this is important is, what if I change one of the files, then I want to make sure that every browser, regardless if they have cached the file or not, gets that update. Right? It's very important. If I say, hey, I'm going to cache my JavaScript for a year, and then within a week I change something, then the browser will not know that I've changed it, because it just uses whatever it's got cached. So by having a version number in the URL, like here it's in the path, it could be a query string behind it, I'm going to force the browser to actually download this again, because the file name has changed. So the browser does not know what this is, and it has to download it again. So that's why it's important that we do versioning when we do expiration. Okay. So, let's just have a look. We're up to 91. That's pretty good. What about page speed here? 87. That's not bad. Let's have a look here. 12 requests down from 24. We're looking good now. Remember that the browser can only have a certain amount of connections open to your web server at once. So the fewer requests we have, the faster the page will load. So this is very important. And so far, so good. The weight of the site is more or less the same. So we haven't really touched on anything there yet. So let's do that. So here I have a way to minify stuff. Has any of you ever played around with minifying JavaScript and CSS? A lot of people. Excellent. Okay, so there are some libraries out there that's going to help us make it very easy to take JavaScript and, you know, put it through these libraries, like the YUI compressor or the Ajax min library from CodePlex. And simply what they do is that they change the content. They might actually change the variable names, the function names, and so on to A, B, C, D, you know, to make everything as small as possible without breaking anything. And they're actually very good at that. So that's what I'm doing. If it's a JS, you know, this is the Ajax minifier, by the way. Ajax minifier is a CodePlex project. So you know, it's free, so take a look at that if you haven't. And simply I'm just gonna minify that. And I do the same if it's style sheets, I'm just gonna minify that, run it through that library. And I save that, okay. So let's take another look. So basically what happened now is I run these things through the minifier. I remove whitespace. I remove redundant stuff. I remove long function names that could be shortened to A, B, C, D, and so on. And instead of 222 kilobytes, I'm now down to 190. So that's like a free 30 kilobytes right there. And I'm sure that, okay, we're still going to get 91. Page speed, on the other hand, is going to love this. 94, yes. Okay. So we're getting down there. So far, 24 requests down to 12, and 330 down to 190. But there's more. So one of the things that both YSLOW and PageSpeed tells us to do is to do HTTP compression. If you are using IIS 7.5 today, I mean, if you're running on Windows 7 or you're running Server 2008 R2, this is on by default. In IIS 7, it is not. But in IIS 7.5, it is. So you don't have to worry about it. You already get this. But let me just illustrate the differences for you. So you see, I turned it off. Do dynamic compression equals false. I'm going to set that to true. And again here, the reason why I had it to false was because it's turned on by default. So for the sake of the demo, I'm going to do this. And what we're now doing is that we're taking all text MIME types. So, you know, text slash CSS, text slash JavaScript, text slash HTML, and compressing it using the gzip algorithm. So think of it as we do zipping, like we do a zip file, right? And we then let the browser unzip it, and that way we have we save a lot of bandwidth. So now nothing happened. Okay. What? Okay, something is fishy. Can anyone see what it is? That is weird. It could be that the IIS, sometimes when there's a lot of stress on the machine, it will not do the dynamic compression. That might be it. I'm not sure. Just for the fun of it. Let's see what it looks like. No compression. Uh-huh. Okay, I find that weird. Okay, let's leave that for now and move on. Actually, if I do this, maybe it will work. Okay, very strange. Okay, anyway, let's just move on. And let's just stay here in PageSpeed. What? Sorry? Thank you. I'm not sure that's the... I forgot to save the web config. No, okay. It just don't play along today. Fine. Okay, if we stay at PageSpeed, we can see that there are other things here that Google wants us to do. And so one of them is optimize images, right? It recognizes that four of my images could be optimized further. And these images are this icon up here and these three down here. I have optimized the other images, but this is kind of important. These images are some I got somewhere online, right? I just downloaded them. The HTML5 logo, I didn't do myself. I downloaded it from somewhere. And when you do that, you can't really know whether or not they have been optimized or not. Even if you do your own art and you save for web from Photoshop or Paint.net or whatever you use, trust me, you can optimize further. And there are some great services out there that let you do that. One of them is... actually, a Yahoo one. And I've written a little plugin for that that allows me to do this. So here are my images. I can do this. Let's see what happens. Here we go. So it went out to smashit.com. Smashit.com is a service by Yahoo, free service where you optimize your images. It does that losslessly. So if you do JPEG or PNG or GIF, it strips away everything that's not needed, but it does not compromise the quality of the image itself. There's also, what's it called, Crunch PNG? It's another good service for this. Oh, sorry, Puny PNG. So, and actually this plugin uses both of them, depending on the file type. But in this case, it was PNG, so it just uses Smashit. And you can see for even small things like this, we get savings of 80%, 30%, so on. So these images are pretty small, but they could have been a lot bigger. And then, of course, the savings in kilobytes would have been a lot larger. And that's actually the reason why we see this as it's green, even though we could optimize further. So now we optimize the images. We can go back. And here we go. So it removed the option here it didn't tell us that we have anything wrong here. So that's good. So keep that in mind. The plugin is called Image Optimizer. You can install it from the extension manager. So here we go. It's this guy. And basically, it just lets you right-click on any folder and say optimize images. So pretty simple stuff. But it turns out that this is one of the tasks that developers and designers, by the way, forget to do. So for most websites out there, we actually see that there's a lot of unoptimized images. And you could save up to 50 kilobytes on just a single page, out of many pages for a single website, for instance. So please keep that in mind. That's going to help you a lot. So even though that in this case, because the image is small, we only saved like 2 kilobytes, why not do it? Especially when we're talking about mobile, right? Today, everything is mobile. When you're on a cell network, every byte counts. So that brings us back to this guy. Here we go. Okay. So 12 requests left and 187. All right. Let's just do something about that. So in my CSS, that's actually where I add all these images. They're all background images from CSS. And as you have noticed, these are part of the footer and part of the search thing. These are some elements of my website that probably lives on my master page and therefore exists throughout my website. So you could say they're part of the Chrome of my website. Right? They are static. They never go away. So a good thing would be to actually make image sprites. So that means do one image where you stick all the four little icons in there and control the position of them. That's a very good thing to do. Another good thing to do is actually to inline them. So a data URI. Data URI is something that was introduced some time ago. It's supported in IE8 and above and all the other major browsers. And basically what it is that you can have, for instance, if you have an image tag, or in this case a background URL, you can specify a URI as a byte array, base64 encoded byte array. Right? So that means you can take an image from disk, for instance, read the bytes, and create a base64 string based on that byte array, and stick that into the background URL. It sounds a little funky. This is what it looks like. Okay?
Hey, what did you just do?
Nothing. I'll show you again, because you mean this one? This is a little plugin that you will be able to download very shortly. Very shortly. Oh. So this is just something that we've been playing around with, how to, we can also do this, for instance. Okay. So what we just did was taken our four images and inlined them. So the reason why it makes sense in this case to inline them is because they exist everywhere that our style sheet exists. And we only use them that one place. If I use the same image on three locations, for instance, I would have to add some classes to my HTML elements and then add the background to those classes, which is fine. I mean, it will still work. But in this case, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's only used one place. The search icon is only used one place. Just go ahead and do this. That's fine. Make sure that you don't go above 32K kilobytes. IE8 would not like that. But, you know, as a rule of thumb, don't do anything over 5 kilobytes or something like that. They tend to get very long, these Base64 encoded things. So the actual Base64 encoding is a little bit larger than the original file, right? So we lose a little bit there, right? But what we gain in this case is that we now eliminate four additional requests that the browser has to make. So F5, we see everything looks the same. Actually, we could do this. Right? So you can see it works. You all got this, right? So you can see the Base64 here, and you know the browser understands completely and gives us a preview here. And look at this. So now we're down to 8 requests. So this is actually from 24 to 8. That's a pretty good metric. Okay. So I get a question a lot from people using Wiselow, and that is, how do we get rid of the configure entity tags rule of Wiselow? Has anyone here wrestled with that? Yeah, a few of you. Okay. So for some reason, you can't just say remove tag, entity tag, in the web config, which is where you would do it. Let me show you. Okay, so the entity tag, before I do this, let me just explain the entity tag. Do we have one? Not here, we have one here. There we go. All right, here we go. So here's my entity tag. It is basically just an arbitrary string, and this is generated by the IIS. So for all static content, like an image, the IIS generates, again, an MD5 hash or some sort of hash based on the file. So when the file changes, the entity tag changes as well. The IIS manages that for us. We don't have to think about this. We never had. It just always worked. The reason why Wiselow says, hey, this is a bad idea, is because if you have a server farm or a cluster and you have a load balancer, what is your guarantee that all the different IISs are going to display the same entity tag? So this is more like a rule. If you're using IIS6 or something like that, there might be some truth to it. This is not one of the most important things in the world, granted, but our goal is to make Wiselow happy in this case, right? So let's make Wiselow happy. And normally, we could do that from the web config. We can say custom headers, and we can just say remove etag, right? In my brain, that's what it takes. But that's not the case. And I don't know why, but I know how to get around it. So what we do is that we add an etag. So this makes perfect sense. We add an etag, and the value is an empty space. Yep. You heard it here first. So maybe we should clear the cache, actually. And let's see if Wiselow agrees. It appears that it does. And we got 94. I'm really bummed about the HTTP compression, though. Maybe if I do this, actually. To be fair, my machine has not been shut off for quite a while. So maybe there is something there. Let's just take a look. Okay. Okay, so that was the entity tag. By the way, the entity. Have you ever done any stuff where you needed to manually add an entity tag for something? How many in here has done that? Two guys. Okay. So the entity tag is actually very important. It's kind of in the same ball game as the last modified header. And I will show you in Fiddler why this is. So, if I clear the cache, go to the website, everything is now downloaded. It looks like this. Can you all see what's going on? Okay. Well, anywho, the results out here are all results. Code 200. 200 OK. HTTP status OK. We have received your request and we have delivered your content that you requested, right? What the etag and last modified header does, let me clear this, is when I hit F5, and I have to hit F5, it doesn't work, not control F5, not, you know, click the bookmark, go back to the page thing. No, if I hit F5, like that, we go back, and now we see that all the return codes, except for the first one, the page itself, but for all the static stuff, the return code is now 304. 304 conditional get. Conditional get. You can do these yourself. But basically what it is, if you notice over here in the body, that's how big the content is in bytes. It's zero. No bytes are being transferred. So what we can see in Fiddler here is that we actually, the browser sends the request to the web server, and the web server returns back 304 and nothing else. Right? No content at all. Basically telling the browser, hey, you've already been here, so you already have this cached. So even though you hit F5, I'm telling you, seriously, browser, just use whatever you got in your cache. I'm not going to give you anything. I'm not going to waste my bandwidth on you. Just all your stuff is, you know, it's up to date. It's fine. So, of course, the page loads as we expect it to. But this is kind of interesting. Right? If we can control this, imagine doing mobile work where bandwidth is so precious. If we can enforce these things, and basically all we have to do is add the etag header or add the last modified header, and then listen for when a request comes in that has some other headers called either if modified since. Well, actually, this, here we go. If modified since or if none match. So what's interesting here, if none match, this looks very much like an etag, right? And that's exactly what it is. The browser, when it caches your images and so on, if there is an etag, it also caches the value of the etag. So whenever I hit F5, that value, the browser sticks that into the if none match header here, because that tells the browser, only give me content if whatever version you have doesn't match this version number that I sent. Right, so that's pretty clever. That's the conditional get. Only send me stuff if newer than what I got. This is a less unknown thing of the HTTP protocol, but you know all the web servers do this. And if you do this for your own custom things, especially when you're doing mobile, there's a lot of gains to get there. Okay. Minify HTML. Okay. Let's do that. minify HTML. So don't do this. Just don't do this. I'm going to do it. This could become a masochistic exercise. Let me just say that right away. There's so many problems with this. But I mean, I have done websites that does this. So it's not that it's impossible. But what happens here is that I remove white space. As you see here, I don't remove all white space. I could do this better than I did. I did like a quick ninja thing. And the quick ninja thing, here was on my master page, I override the render method, and very simply, I just regex some stuff there. And the regexes are up here. So these are very crude, these are very basic. But basically, remove white space, remove stuff that I don't need. Right? It's like minifying JavaScript and CSS. Just get rid of it. The problem becomes that you could depend on white space between two tags, like a closing of one tag and the opening of another. You could rely on the white space in there in your design. You shouldn't, but chances are that you probably do even without noticing it. So if you want to turn this on, you need to test your stuff and maybe make some modifications. But that's okay. So let's just take a look. So Google thinks they can do it better. That's okay, 3%. And they can, actually. They're pretty good at it. So this is what Google does. Is it really? This is what I did. Oh yeah, no, it's good enough. So what they do is they actually, here, they remove the value quotes. They do a little bit more. So that's why they get these extra 3%. What happened? Anyone? Any technician knows what to do? Sorry about this. Don't know what I pressed here. I don't know. There we go. Perfect. Thank you. Okay. So if we imagine that we have enabled compression, we are very close to 100. We are at 99. We're at 99, both places. So that's all good. But this is where it gets interesting. There is one more thing. Actually, there is one more thing. So I think, personally, I think that this is pretty damn impressive that we went from 24 to 8 requests and from 330 to 184K by doing some web config tricks, by moving JavaScript up and down. And, well, we did the handler thing. That was a bit more. There's some great libraries out there. So even on NuGet, you can just get the package and it will work for you right out of the box. I just rolled my own because then I could change some stuff. So anyway, I think it's pretty damn impressive what we've been able to do this short. So, but I think we could just take it that little step further. Because even though this website is a daily photo website, I only post like once a month, right? I'm just lazy like that. And a lot of websites, they don't update every day. A lot of websites are pretty static. And if they have content changing, some of it might just come from an AJAX call or from an iframe from another content provider and whatnot. So in the case where you have websites that do not change frequently, but maybe once a week or once a month or something like that. There's no reason why we can't set an expiration on the page itself, right? So let's say that we always, every Tuesday is deploy day, or every first Thursday of the month is deploy day. I can just make my page always expire the first Thursday of the month. So that means when a browser comes in the day after, we tell it, hey, just keep this page in your memory, in your cache, until a month from now, to the next Thursday, first Thursday of the next month. So the day after, when the browser revisits, it just has everything cached. It's a good thing. So in this case, I've simplified it a lot. I've said the response cache expires just 30 days from now. That's not what you want. So in this case, it just explains you want to set the fixed date. You want to say on that particular day. But just for the example, I'm just saying around 30 days from now. And this is where it gets interesting. Because now it looks like this. Right? So now we can actually, at least for, in this case, for 30 days, say, don't download anything. There's nothing to download. You've been here before. For the next month, come here every day to watch my penguin images. Don't download anything. You already got it. Right? So if we go mobile, this makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense on desktop as well, but especially on mobile. If I had the HTTP compression on, right, it would still be 8 requests, but the 184 would be more like 50 Ks. So that's really annoying that the demo gods are not with me today. Actually, I changed this one. This is completely shot in the dark. That could be something. Yeah, no, there's not. Okay. It is missing, but the thing is that it should be on by default. No, I haven't touched that at all, actually. What did I do? Is it this guy? Okay. In theory, it's great. Okay. Do we have time? So this was some stuff. I want to show you just one last thing. I can. So please just, bring on the questions while I put it on here. There's one over here.
That Flight 64 conversion plugin, you said it would release shortly. Where can we find that and where can we call it?
What was the last part?
Where can we call it and where can we find it?
Yes. So the question was that URL embedding extension. So I'm assuming you mean this guy. This extension right here. What's it called and where can we find it? I call it CSS Power Tools, but that's just a code name. It doesn't exist anywhere. So I will post it as soon as I can. I want to get some other stuff in there. It's going to, of course, be an open source thing and everything, but you're going to get it. So follow the web platform blog, follow my blog or Twitter or something. There will be anything around the web platforms and tool teams. We will make sure that you get this info, but it's not quite ready yet. Yep.
This site's pretty small, but what about on larger sites removing unused CSS, which we saw there, but you didn't really have to handle. How do you handle that, especially with what you use to combine everything that's in the folder?
Yeah. So question is, what if you have a big site with maybe 100 style sheets? How do you handle that with the bundling feature? Right. Well, you probably separate, in this case, I would separate them in different folders. So for this particular example, there's many techniques to do this. For this example, what I did was say, everything in the same folder is bundled into the same response. But it does not look in subfolders. So what you would then do is you would just reference subfolders. So you might have two style sheets, two bundled style sheets. You would have one called global. That's where you have your reset CSS, your Chrome, your menu. And then you might have one called contact CSS, where you have maybe five style sheets that makes up your contact page. So then you have two. It's not that you have to have only one. That's not the case. It's just don't have 100. Just minimize as much as you can. Yeah, so does this handle conditional comments, and what about the ordering of the JavaScript within the bundles? So, conditional comments, no. This is not support. Well, conditional comments, you can. I can take this and put it in I can put a conditional comment around this, right? How does that look? It's something about the, if IE less than 9, something like that, right? LT9, IE less, anyway, so this is a conditional comment. So of course that will work like this. But for in this case, the sorting, in my case, which is a simplified case for demo purposes, the sorting is your alphanumeric window sorting of file name. So you could prefix them 01, 02, but that, yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't do that normally, no.
So it would be worth the extra request to go to CDN.
Yes, so the question is, I serve the jQuery from my own website. Why not do it from the CDN? Right. So I have in here, jQuery. Where we go? There we go. Yeah, so best practice is serve it off of the ASP.NET CDN or Google CDN. You would want to do that, definitely. Because chances are that the users have that cached already. So that's a good rule. Do that. Okay. No more questions right now. I have one. let's see if I can get it up here. We're almost there, almost there. This is just a very common pitfall. Yes, here we go. I don't know if you can see it. 404, favicon.ico does not exist. Browsers will try to resolve your favicon if you don't have one. If you don't specify one, they will try to hit this URL. Firefox will do it 3 times. Right? IE does it once. Point is, if we don't have that, we're going to serve the 404 page. In this case, 404 page in my simple website here is just the default ASP.NET error page, the IIS 404. But in your custom 404, you might log the username of that. You might do database work. You might create a control hierarchy to build up that page. And for what? For favicon.ico? No. So always have one. You probably have one. So you probably did like I'm going to do now. I just downloaded one online. And that's great, right? So now I have the fail icon. And you can see it's up here. All right? That's brilliant, because when I want to pin my site. But take a look. There you go. That was not it. Oh, my God, 153 kilobytes. Oh, no, right? I just downloaded this from iconarchive.org or something. Right? You might have done the same for your small projects or whatever. You might have, or the designer gives you the ICO files. So this is not good. This is just a tip. Double-click it. It opens up like this. We definitely don't need the big version. So that's how icon files are actually made. They have different sizes in them. We don't need this guy. All right, so let's delete that. Let's take the 128 by 128, delete that. We just want the 32 by 32, basically. So let's just delete everything else. Maybe you didn't know this. I think this is a really cool thing. Okay, here we go. Save. Did I close it? Oh, I closed it. Okay. And here we go, 5 kilobytes. Whew. Just a little warning. Open up your icon files, make sure that you have the most optimized one as well. Okay, so I'm completely out of time. I have time for one question if you have one, and then we have to end. Yep.
How important are CDNs in parallel downloads?
Oh, they're very important. So how important are CDNs and parallel downloads? They're very important. The whole thing about that your browser only can open X amount of connections to the same web server. And by web server, I mean domain. So we can parallelize our downloads. Let's say we have 20 images. We can parallelize them by spreading them out on different subdomains, for instance. So we have S1, S2, S3 dot, mysite.com. And we reference them from there. Because the browser will then treat it as a unique thing and get them quick. And it makes a huge difference. And CDNs makes an even bigger difference because you want to do this on a CDN, a content delivery network, because that makes sure that your content is located around the world. So when I from Denmark requests your website, all the images come from a server in Denmark and not from a server in Las Vegas. And the latency over the Atlantic is actually substantial. So you can save a lot by parallelizing and serving from a content network. Definitely. All right. We're all out of time. So thank you, everyone, for coming.